Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour, First Baptist Sanitarian Congregation, 9:30 to 12:00 PM, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 26, 2016, August 8, 2020. We will start our first service today with the following title. Who at my door standing? Who at my door is standing? Patiently drawing near, entrance within demanding, whose is the force I hear? Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart I hasten, thee will I open wide. Though he rebuke and chasten, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tones have fallen, open the door for me. If ever heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours weary, knocking again is he. Joshua, art thou not weary, waiting so long for me? Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If ever heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Everlasting Kingdom Part 4, we're going to continue our series. Let's go to Psalms 145. And let's read that. Start with verse 1. I will extol thee, my Elohim, O King, and I will bless thy name forever and ever. Every day I will bless thee, and I will praise thy name forever and ever. Great is the Yahweh, and greatly to be praised, and his greatness is unsearchable. One generation shall praise thy works to another, and shall declare thy mighty acts. I will speak of the glorious honor of thy majesty and of thy wondrous works. And men shall speak of the might of thy terrible acts, and I will declare thy greatness. They shall abundantly utter the memory of thy great goodness, and shall sing of thy righteousness. The Yahweh is gracious and full of compassion, slow to anger, and of great mercy. Yahweh is good unto all, and his tender mercies are over all his works. All thy works shall praise thee, O Yahweh, and thy saints shall bless thee. They shall speak of the glory of thy kingdom and talk of thy power. To make known of the sons of men his mighty acts and the glorious majesty of his kingdom. Thy kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and thy dominion endureth throughout all generations. For the Yahweh upholdeth all that fall, and raises up all those that be bowed down. For the eyes of all wait upon thee, and thou givest them their meat in due season. That's all the remnant, that's all of those that are bowed down. He's going to raise up. Thou openest thine hand, and satisfy the desire of every living thing. Yahweh is righteous in all his ways, and holy in all his works. Yahweh is nigh unto all them that call upon him, unto all that call upon him in the truth. It is right there. Yahweh is nigh unto all them that call upon him, unto all that call upon him in the truth. He will fulfill the desire of them that fear him. He also will hear their cry and will save them. Yahweh preserveth all them that love him, but all the wicked will he destroy. My mouth shall speak the praise of the Yahweh, and let all flesh bless his holy name forever and ever. Our key word today is inheritance. And so we want to look at some more Bible scriptures. As we read there in Psalms 145, we had a key word of inheritance there. And it, I believe it was verse 13. It says, thy kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and thy dominion endures throughout all generations. And it talks about the inheritance that Yahweh has to his people. Let's look at that again. It says in Psalms 145, verse 1, I will extol thee, my Elohim, O King. And so the King actually is Yahshua. And I will bless thy name forever and ever. And that's what we are to do. We are to bless his name forever and ever. To keep it ever before us. And if we do that, we won't have any problem of failing. Numbers chapter 32 will be our next reading. Key word, like I said, is inheritance. It says, starting verse 1, now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and unto Eliezer, the priest, and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Elilah and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, five different locations here with five different names. No doubt the names of the people that were the head of their tribe on those nine different locations there are feeding pastures for cattle there on the west side of Jordan. That's still in the wilderness of Sin. They had crossed out of the wilderness of Egypt, crossed the Red Sea earlier. Now they're in the wilderness of Sin in the land of Israel. But they're on the west side of Jordan. Now keep that in mind. Even the country in which the Yahweh smote before the congregation of Israel is a land for cattle. And thy servants have cattle. Wherefore said they, if we have congregation in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for possession, and bring us not over Jordan. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and ye sit here? Okay, now what happened here? Reuben and Gad didn't want to go over Jordan. They want to possess those nine feeding pastures that belong to Ataroth and Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Elealeh, and Shebam, and Nebo, and Beon. They want to possess those nine locations for their cattle. They were already in the land, as far as they're concerned. And so it says, and Moses, okay, so they were in the wilderness, that they had come into after crossing out of the wilderness of Egypt, across the Red Sea, because Moses brought them across the Red Sea, and they spent 40 years, or they spent only 40 years with Moses in the wilderness of Sin, in the land of Israel, on the west side of the Jordan. Okay. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and unto the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? Oh, Reuben and Gad, they wanted to sit there. And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which Yahweh hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel, that they should not go into the land which the Yahweh hath given them. And the Yahweh's anger was kindled at the same time, and he sware, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because he had not wholly followed me. Save Caleb the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Yahweh. Now, in 1970, when I joined Brother Johnson, we were identified as the Joshua and the Caleb. No matter what they thought about it, that's the way Yahweh showed me. That's what we represented in 1970. We was holding that position as well as others. Alright, so now I said, because why were we together? Because we wholly followed the Yahweh with all the truth that we had up to that point. Brother Johnson did the same thing. We're wholly following the Yahweh. And the Yahweh's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Alright? So, the antithetical 40 years has passed from 1930 to 1970. That was the antitype of the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness under Moses and the type coming out of Egypt. Sister Price said the Adventists had completely returned back to Egypt by 1890, and Yahweh gave Israel a 40-year spiritual fast for Judah from 1890 to 1930, so now they're ready to come out of the land of Egypt. And that's what Bethi-Hotep built his mission as. We're coming out of Egypt because Yahweh has set his hand a second time to deliver his people out of Egypt, out of spiritual bondage. So that was in 1930, see, but right on time. And he made them one in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation had done evil in the sight of Yahweh was consumed. So he made the Davidian world for Rome in the wilderness 40 years. He made the Adventist world wander in the wilderness 40 years, from 1850 to 1890. And lo and behold, they drifted back to Egypt. Yahweh had to bring that feeding pasturbation to a close that had done this in the Antitype from 1850 to 1890 with the Adventist. And he had to give them a 40-year interval there for Judah to fast for 40 years. Okay, that was part of the house of Israel, total, but yet separated, just like they were separated after the Solomon's death. 10 tribes went north, 2 tribes stayed in the south. Judah and Benjamin stayed in the south. But likewise, they have the same thing today. They were separated in 1930, the 10 tribes stayed north, Tacoma Park, Forestland, 7 Adventist headquarters. 2 tribes stayed south, down in Waco, Texas, Lion Country.
The bear represented the 10 tribes in the north. The lion represents the 2 tribes in the south. Here he says, the Yahweh's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years, all 12 tribes. Now keep that in mind. So when you said that, when I said that the Davidians wandered from 1930 to 1970 in the wilderness, yes, they did. Because most of their membership was made up of Seventh-day Adventists. You get the point? And the shepherd rod represented their message to the Adventist church. So those that wouldn't join them, they represented their message back to them. And the former Adventist brethren that had joined the V.T. Hala for the shepherd rod, they were part of carrying the message back to their mother. So that represented all 12 tribes being represented there from 1930 to 1970 by the shepherd rod. All right, and the Yahweh's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation that had done evil in the sight of Yahweh was consumed. And behold, you are risen up in your father's stead and increase a sinful man to augment yet the fierce anger of the Yahweh toward Israel. Now he's telling, now Moses is telling, he's telling Gad and Reuben, he's telling them, he says, you all have risen up in your father's stead. Your father's rebellion at Kadesh Barnea is the reason why we're here in the wilderness right now for 40 years. Now, you all have risen up in your father's stead and to increase an increase of sin. You represent the increase of sinful men to augment yet the fierce anger of the Yahweh toward Israel. But if you turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and you shall destroy all this people. Now if you continue on this and you turn again like your fathers did, then you're going to destroy all this people. That's including those 20 years and younger. So it says in Numbers 32:16, and they came near unto him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle. In other words, and cities for our little ones, right here in the wilderness. Right here. Now, why was it that Moses was leading the children of Israel to over 40, between 40 and 45 locations over a 40-year period there in the wilderness? They had to move from one location to another. Though they were people in the land possessing the wilderness, the land of the wilderness. Just because it was wilderness doesn't mean it was desert. There was good feeding pastures there west of the Jordan. All right, but we ourselves will go ready on, at least Reuben and Gad are sent. But we will go ready on with our people before the children of Israel until we have brought them unto their place. Okay, until we brought them over the Jordan. But that wasn't their calling, that wasn't their job to do that. But here they are telling Moses, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. See, there's inhabitants there in the wilderness, in the land. Just named 9 of them to you a while ago. And we're going to fence our cities so we keep those inhabitants out. But we're going to have to take over their land to build our city. Well, the thing is, we're going to have to drive them out of the land. But if they build walls around their cities, they're going to have to constantly protect themselves every time they go outside their walls because their enemies are still there in the land. The whole idea was cross over Jordan, drive out all the enemies out of the land on the east side of Jordan, whether that's called the Promised Land for Israel. The west side of Jordan was not called the Promised Land. It was not called the Promised Land. The Promised Land for all the 12 tribes of Israel was on the east side of Jordan. that they were to possess all of the land of Israel from the Euphrates clear to the Red Sea and to the Gulf of Aqaba there, south Yemen, Saudi Arabia. Okay. But here again, really saying, so we ourselves will go ready on before the children of Israel until we have brought them into the faith, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return unto your houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. Well, Reuben and Gad did not want to go over and take their possession on the east side of the Jordan with their brethren. They thought, well, if the other 10 tribes are going over Jordan, they'll get away from us. They'll be on the east side, we'll be on the west side. And just me and Gad, because we got a lot of cattle, Gad and Reuben, we can have this whole west side to ourselves. Just the two of us. So this is how they figured it out for themselves, without consulting Moses. Numbers 32:19. For we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan or forward, because our inheritance is fallen to us on this side of Jordan eastward. Okay, so on this side of Jordan eastward, yeah, I guess it would be east from them because they were west. Well, anyway, I was saying, I might have had my directions backwards, but anyway, let's go ahead. Numbers 32:20. And Moses said unto them, if you will do this thing, if you will go on before the Yahweh the Lord, and will go all of you on over Jordan for the Yahweh until he hath driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before the Yahweh, then afterwards you shall return and be guiltless before the Yahweh and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Yahweh. So now if you do all of this, go ahead and help all your brethren to get delivered over on the other side. Okay. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against Yahweh, and be sure your sin will find you out. Okay, you give your word, you don't perform it. That's in Numbers 32:23. He said, then be sure your sin will find you out. Verse 24, build you cities for your little ones, and folds for your sheep, and do that which hath proceeded out of your mouth. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spake unto Moses, saying, thy servants will do as my master commanded. Our little ones, our wives, our flocks, and all our cattle shall be there in the cities of Gilead. But thy servants will pass over every man armed for war before the Yahweh to battle, as my master said. So concerning them, Moses commanded Eleazar the priest, Joshua the son of Nun, and the chief father of the tribes of the children of Israel. And Moses said unto them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over Jordan, every man armed to battle before the Yahweh, and the land shall be subdued before you, and you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. Now keep in mind that Yahweh gives Brother Johnson the land of Gilead here in Texas for a possession. Now he gave that to him, but he didn't hold on to his possession. He lost it in the end. Alright, let's go on. Here in Numbers 32:30, but if they will not pass over with you on, they shall have possession among you in the land of Canaan. And the children of Gad, the children of Reuben answered, saying, as Yahweh has said unto thy servants, so will we do. We will pass over armed before the Yahweh and to the land of Canaan, that the possession of our inheritance on this side of Jordan may be ours. And Moses gave unto them even the children of Gad, and to the children of Reuben, and to half the tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, the land with the cities thereof in the coast, even the cities of the country round about. So he gave Gilead unto Gad, and to the children of Reuben, and unto half the tribe of Manasseh, the son of Joseph. Alright, verse 34. And the children of Gad built Dibon and Ataroth and Aroer and Ataroth and Shophan and Jazer and Jarheshbah and Beth-Nimarah and Bethelon, fence cities and folds for sheep. Now look at this, fence cities and folds for sheep. And the son of Reuben built Heshbon and Elilei and Kirjath Aim and Nebo and Baal-meon, their names being changed, and Shibmah, and gave other names unto the cities which they built. And the children of Makar, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead and took it, and dispossessed the Amorite which was in it. And Moses gave Gilead unto Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he dwelt therein. And Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and took the small towns thereof and called them Havoth Jair. And Naboth went and took Kenath and the villages thereof and called it Nobah after his own name. End of chapter 32 of Numbers. Okay, the kingdom, by Brother Study Johnson, Jubilee, 1998, calling the very elect, the chosen ones of Israel. If you are truly a Davidian, one who believes that V.T. Hardoff was a true prophet, if you believe that the shepherd's rod was a message of inspiration, then you will take heed to the special message that Brother Hardoff left for the Davidians. That is, and I quote, "A Davidian is one who follows on and on into the newly revealed truth." So, Brother Johnson proved that he was not a true Davidian when he wouldn't advance on with the latest truth revealed unto him in 2002, a message from heaven by Elijah David unto yours truly. So he proved that he was not a true Davidian. But he's telling these others, okay, he said, a Davidian is one who follows on and on into the newly revealed truth. Thus every Davidian is obligated to meet this command, since the instrument that you hold in your hands is packed with the present truth from the shepherd God message. I ask you to approach it with an open mind. Lay aside all blindness, prejudices, preconceived ideas, opinions, and theories, and let inspiration speak unto you. This is not something you take lightly, for rejection of the truth is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit, the unpardonable sin. Well, it looks like July the 14th, 2002, when I delivered that message from heaven, Brother Johnson was admonished to hear it and to accept it right then and there. Instead, he put it on hold for 2 weeks, and then he came away with a message that he had rejected it. So he had a 2-week moratorium to rule upon that message that he said that I said was from heaven. So he had a 2-year moratorium. And so on July the 27th, he delivered his moratorium in the church. And it was up on me. I was a false one. Okay, and so he blasphemed and committed the unpardonable sin. So move ahead with caution that you be not found guilty. As you study and weigh the facts contained in this article and hopefully accept the truth it teaches, try to ever remember that one cannot keep their shingle out unless it is qualified continually that the shingle may be justified. So it's got to be qualified continually so that it can be justified. Now, it is amazing. So, we know that that shingle that he had put out, it came down. Came down in 2002. So it didn't continue on continually, like he preached and prophesied it would. So he didn't become justified by the truth that he was teaching. Okay, now look at this. The name Davidian, deriving from the name of the king of ancient Israel, accrues under this association by the reason of his fallen aspect. Now, Vitiholis is talking here. He's saying we got our name Davidian because it comes from David. Okay, and so first it is dedicated to the work of announcing and bringing forth the restoration as predicted in Hosea 1:11 and 3 and 5. Of David's kingdom and antitype upon the throne of which Joshua, the son of David, is to sit. Second, it purports itself to be the first of the first fruits of the living. The vanguard from among the present-day descendants of those Jews who composed the early Christian church. With the emergence of this vanguard and his army, the first fruits, on which are elected the 12,000 out of each of the 12 tribes of Jacob, 144,000, Revelation 14:1-8, who stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb, Revelation 14:1-8. The reign of antipical David began. Now, did you hear that? So he says the reign of antipical Davidians began. And that's taken from the Leviticus of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, page 3, paragraph 2. That's written by V.T. Holliff, and here he is quoting V.T. Holliff. The antithetical David's reign began. Okay, hence the logical name that would represent her work from this time, March 27, 1948, down to the time that the kingdom is set up, is to be Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. So what was Brother Johnson doing naming his church 11th Hour Adventist Remnant Church, and then 11th Hour Adventist Assembly? And he just named it one thing after another all through the year. But here he had it. He had it here, and he wrote it right here in his tract that it's supposed to be named Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. But he gives it all kinds of different names. Yet it's written right here in 2 TGR 34, page 24, by B.D. Holland, that the name is supposed to be Davidian Seventh-day Adventist until the antithetical David's reign began. Question. Who are the chosen ones of Israel? Are you one of them? These questions are pertinent and should cause great concern and deep thinking, seeing that they are dealing with the soul salvation of the elite to be. Who are the elite to be? They are those who qualify for eternal life, which according to Matthew 7:13-14 are but a few, and according to Ezekiel 9:3-4, they are the ones who received the mark by the man in linen through the fifth angel's message. They are the ones that become part of the kingdom of Yahweh. Further, Revelation 3:12 points out that the chosen ones are they that receive the three names or seals in their forehead. The first seal is the name of Yahweh, the three angels' message of Revelation 14:6-11. The second seal is that of the new Jerusalem. The fourth angel's message is Revelation 7:1-4. That's the seal of the 144,000. The third seal is the new name. So you get the third seal after the 144,000 are sealed. Brother Johnson named all three of those men. Even before, before he even got his pay, he named those three as SEALs. And those three times that they come in. And yet Brother Johnson hadn't even finished out his day of work in the 11th hour to get his pay. And here he is already interpreting what these seals are and when they're going to come. So it says the chosen ones are sealed by obeying the five angels' messages. Oh, the chosen ones. Well, who are the chosen ones? The chosen ones are your children of Israel that come out at the five different calls that were made for them when they come out of Egypt, the first call out of Egypt. Those that gets the seal to go into the promised land are the ones that are chosen. In other words, he elects them. I mean, he calls them all out of Egypt. He brings them all equally into the wilderness. And that's where he sifts them. He sifts them through the wilderness. And those that come through the sifting and emerge as the remnant, then they're the ones that are called. In other words, he says, I have vetted all of you here in the wilderness. All of you, give you all an equal chance to see who's qualified to go into the land. And these are the ones that are qualified. These are the ones that agree to follow all my statutes and judgments, precepts, commandments, and laws. That I've commanded, everything that I've commanded them, the ones that are qualified are the ones that have done this. That way I put my seals upon them and bring them into the promised land. So you have five different calls mentioned in Revelation 20, the five groups of laborers. Okay, so now who are the called ones? The chosen ones are sealed by obeying these five angels' messages. Well, it just so happened when the last group of laborers, or the fourth group of laborers, next to the last group of laborers, only five groups altogether, and that fourth group is called to get their pay, what they do? They say, we don't want this kind of pay. We want our penny a day eternal life right now. And Yahshua was vetting them to see if they could come through the first judgment so that they could get their pay. Now you have to come through the judgment to get your pay. So that would have to be the judgment of the living starting in 2002. So Brother Johnson was the first one to call to come through the judgment of the living to get his pay. You got to cross over the line. You've got to be able to come up to the bar of justice, to hear your verdict read to you. And it's the judge sitting on the other side of the line that reads the verdict. It's not you. He reads the verdict, and whatever he reads, that's where you're going to be. If he gives you a positive verdict, you're going to cross over the line. If he don't, you're going to stay behind. Okay? All classes of Second Advent believers agree that the angel brought to view in the 6th and 7th verses of this chapter of Revelation 14 represent the Advent message to the church and the world. If this is true, then all five of the angels brought to view in this chapter represents five distinct messages prior to the Advent, or we are left without a rule to interpret this chapter. Word to the Little Flock, page 10 and 11. Only those that have obtained all three seals are found worthy to go to heaven, according to the aforementioned facts. For those that have followed the plan of salvation through the heavenly sanctuary, according to the law of Moses, by which their sins are purged with the blood of our great high priest, Yahshua, the Messiah, as pointed out in the Hebrews 9:22, these are Elohim's children that have kept all of the laws written with the finger of Yahweh, and those written by Moses, as pointed out in the Exodus 31:18 and Nehemiah 8:1-8. The record goes on to show in Ezekiel 9:5-6 that those who did not receive the mark of the man in linen, the fifth angel's message, Revelation 18:1-4, sent by Yahweh from heaven, fall under the slaughter weapons of the other five men that were to follow him, the man in linen. The reason that Ezekiel 9 was not and could not be executed under the fourth angel's message, the Revelation 7:1-4, is because Z.T. Hollis and the shepherd Rod's message were the antitype of John the Baptist, as shown in 1 TGR 36, page 3, paragraph 1 through page 4, paragraph 1, showing that John's work was an example of our work, John being the type and ours being the antitype. Okay. Another reason that Ezekiel 9 wasn't fulfilled under the fourth angel's message is that John the Baptist was the forerunner of Yahshua, the forerunner of the judgment for the living, the forerunner of the purification of the church, and the forerunner of the setting up of the apostolic, of an apostolic kingdom and the Yahshua. Therefore, V.T. Hollis, being the antitype of John the Baptist, was the forerunner of Yahshua Messiah and the antitype. Well, I have to beg the difference with Brother Johnson at this point here. V.T. Hollis was not the forerunner of the Yahshua the Messiah. V.T. Hollis was not the forerunner. If there was a forerunner, it was Ben Roden that succeeded V.T. Hollis. Because remember, when John the Baptist's time came to fulfillment for him to start preaching in the wilderness, that was 6 months before Yahshua appeared on the scene, and it was strictly to announce his appearance, and so forth. Well, that's what Ben Roden, he came at the end of the rod period. That's when the announcement for the Isaac branch that Brother Johnson received. That's when the announcement was made for it by Ben Roden, not V.T. Hollis. So if anybody was a forerunner of Yahshua's message, as Brother Johnson received, it was Ben Roden. Because he announced the branch in about 1960, the very message that Yahweh gave Brother Johnson to announce in 1970. But the Isaac branch, Ben Roden called it just the branch. He was 10 years ahead of Brother Johnson, trying to usurp Brother Johnson doing it, but he didn't succeed. So it says, Yahshua and the Antitype, the period following the rod, according to the words of Isaiah 11:1, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The word his referred to Jesse, showing that this branch comes from the root of Jesse. Whereas when he came the first time, he came as a branch of David to complete the family tree of Jesse, designated as Jesse, David, and Yahshua, or Jesse, rod and branch. Okay, let's analyze that. Jesse, David, and Yahshua in the type. Jesse, the father of David. David, the rod in the type, and Yahshua, the branch in the type, in that order. So in our order today, then we would have Jesse, the Seventh-day Adventist. We'd have the shepherd rod, the David, the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, and then we'd have the Isaac branch message by Brother Johnson as the Yahshua. So those three characters are played out by the Adventist, the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, and the branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventist, by three named characters, Ellen G. White, B.T. Hollis, and Brother Johnson. Okay. Okay, so now, Jesse the rod today, Jesse would be the Seventh-day Adventist, the rod would be the shepherd's rod from 1937, and the branch would be the Isaac branch from 1970 to 2010, a 40-year period. with two leaders. Just like the Rod period was a 40-year period, 1930 to 1970, but it had two leaders. It had V.T. Holliffe and Roden, and the Branch period, the Isaac Branch period, in 1970 to 2010, had two leaders. The first leader was cut off after 33 years of leadership, and his successor, Elijah David, finished out the Branch Davidian period by announcing Ezekiel 9 going through the city and marking and slaying of those that didn't have the that wasn't signed and confirmed all the abomination and the advent of sheriff. So that had to take place between 2003 and 2010, no doubt it did. And so we have a timeline there. So we have Jesse. Jesse had a 40-year period. Father of David. And Jesse, again, of the tribe of Judah himself, could not have been of the 10 tribes of Israel that the Adventists represented up front, from 1850 to 1890. So Jesse appeared then on the scene in 1890 because he was a Judahite. And the prophecy of Ezekiel 4 says Judah lays on his right side for 40 years. But who was that Judah? That was Jesse, the father of David, because David was born anatypically in 1930 with a shepherd Rod, called Davidian Seventh-day Adventist. And who gave birth to David? Who was a father? It was the 40-year period from 1890 to 1930. Jesse had a 40-year period there for Jesse. What was the first 40-year period for the advent of sin in 1850 to 1890? They were in the palace of the king. They were in the palace of the king. Antipical Pharaoh. That's where Moses' first 40-year period was spent, for 40 years in the palace of the king of Pharaoh. So the first 40-year period of Moses' life in Antioch was 1850 to 1890, so it had to be spent in the antitypical palace of the antitypical Pharaoh, 40-year period. Moses fed into the wilderness of Midian for 40 years, and the antitype, that would be from 1890 to 1930, where he herded sheep and he had peace and tranquility for 40 years. Moses had wonderful peace and tranquility for 40 years. But Yahweh was able to talk to him and teach him the truth about salvation and about the leadership of the true leadership of Israel. He said it's not dependent upon man's strength alone. He said you have to have me and my son to help you and guide you and give you power and words to say at the right time, and the words that we give you to say, it won't be your words. Moses tried to deliver the children of Israel when he was in Pharaoh's palace by his own strength. He killed an Egyptian to prove it. It was Moses' own way of figuring it out. But that wasn't Yahweh's way. Same thing today. Man keeps on trying to figure out how to accomplish Yahweh's will and purpose in his own imagination and his own strength. Impossible. Totally impossible. Wow, so it says that and a branch shall grow out of his roots, Isaiah 11:1. The word his refers to Jesse showing that this branch comes from the root of Jesse. Whereas when he came the first time, he came as the branch of David to complete the family tree of Jesse designated as Jesse, David, and Yahshua, or as Jesse, Rod, and Branch. Well, it was called Jesse, David, and Yahshua in the tide. It's called Jesse, David, and Yahshua in the Antitype. But they have another name they apply. They leave the Jesse all intact, But David, they give it the rod. And for Yeshua, they give it the branch. Okay, so the branch, I don't believe it's really necessarily a name anymore. I know it says, you shall be called Yeshua or righteousness, which is Yeshua, and it does talk about the righteous branch. But I believe that that's an identity and a name given for a church name or the people that are believers that have been sanctified. Let's go on with that. It said, this relationship shows that David the rod is not Yahshua the branch, for the rod sprang from the stem of Jesse, and the branch from the rod. A fact which is born out in the city or in the crowd of the multitude when Yahshua entered Jerusalem, they shouted, Hosanna to the Son of David. Matthew 21:15. Okay, so now Yahshua was called the Son of David. A lot of people, his followers 2,000 years ago. Therefore, the rod coming from the stem of Jesse is symbolic of David, and the branch coming from the rod is symbolic of the Son of David. Yahshua the top. Whereas the branch Isaiah 11:1 grows out of the root of Jesse. Well, when you say it grows out of the root of Jesse, just all you're saying, it comes out of the Seventh Day Adventist Church. That's all you're saying. And the root, the David, the rod, comes out of the root of Jesse as well. You can't be a genealogical bloodline descendant of anyone unless you come out of the original root, and that would be Jesse's original root here. David comes out, Yahshua, the branch comes out of it, the rod comes out of it. Alright, two different representations of Yahshua from two different sources. The first representation of Yahshua in this context shows him appearing as a son of David, as one having gained authority in 27 AD. The type. The second representation of Yahshua and the branch growing out of the root of Jesse, as shown in Isaiah 11:1-12, is one having gained authority in 1970 AD. Now, there's a key words here, gaining authority. These are key words. Gaining authority. What does it mean to gain authority? It means that your time has come. And you only achieve that and gain that by identifying the prophecies, identifying when the time is for you to take your place as the leader. So when you understand the prophecy and you have inspiration, then you have gained the authority to rule. If you don't have a knowledge and understanding, and you don't know anything about what the present truth message is, how in the world are you going to gain authority? Impossible. You gain your authority through obedience to the first words first that come to you. When you understand them aright and learn obedience unto them, then in due time you'll gain authority if you are faithful to your calling and acknowledge and adhere to everything that you have been taught along the way. Then he'll raise you up from among your brethren because you have gained knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. All three of those things together. And you know, all three of those words are found in one verse in the Bible, and it's over, I believe, in Daniel. Now in Daniel chapter 2, verse 21, it says, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removeth the kings, and he setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge unto them that know understanding. Now, he only gives wisdom unto the wise. He don't give it to anybody else. He gives knowledge unto them that know understanding. So, if you know understanding, how are you going to know understanding How is he going to give you knowledge? How do you know understanding? In other words, those that have the correct understanding, the interpretation of the truth, period. No matter what truth it is, any truth, all truth. If you have understanding, it's because, first place, in the beginning, you were a wise person. What makes you a wise person? You was wise to have fear. You feared the Yahweh Almighty. You feared to break His laws. You feared to break any of His commandments. That's what made you a wise person. And then whenever when He could trust you to be obedient to all of His statutes, judgments, and commandments, what did He do? Then He gave you wisdom. And then and He says that He gives unto the wise knowledge, and He gives knowledge to them that know understanding. So those wise that are wise, first, that has shown obedience to all His commandments, then He gives them knowledge, and to them that know understanding. He gives wisdom and knowledge to them that know understanding. Okay. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with Him. So Yahweh the Father and His Son knows what dwells in the darkness, because the light dwells with them, not in the darkness. For mankind has fallen to and depending on creeping around in the darkness trying to figure out the meaning of life, and then first place, they're not wise. They don't have wisdom. They don't have knowledge to know understanding. Okay. Looks like we're getting pretty close to the end of our study here for this hour. So, I believe we've pretty much covered our study for today. We're going to begin on our next study with the same chapter on page 2 of Verse Study Johnson, Follow the Kingdom, the Jubilee track of 1998. He's dealing with the three feeding pastures, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead. He's dealing with this here mountain, this great mountain that this little stone is hewing out of. And that strikes the image on the feet and grows the mountain, fills the whole earth. And lo and behold, he's got that stone. And this is given to Brother Johnson by vision now. He saw this by vision from heaven. This little stone coming out of this mountain, this great mountain. The little stone hewn out without hands, it's hewn out by the Spirit. And it's striking this here mountain that Brother Johnson has here, the third mountain called Gilead, the Isaac Branch Mountain. It's striking it. Well, there's only one place in Scripture that backs up anything like this of any kind of a stone striking a mountain. And that's striking the image on the feet and grows to a mountain filled the whole earth. So then, this great mountain that the stone is hewn out of is claimed off because they have the prophecy in Micah 4:7 that says it is. And then this here mountain that the Gilead that it hits, it's claimed off because it's the headwaters of this great mountain that the little stone came out of. So the little stone came out of the headquarters, come and struck the little mountain on the behind the head and destroyed him on the feet of that image that was in that little mountain, Gilead Center. And then it grew into a mountain and filled the whole earth. So this little stone, then it annihilates all four of these mountains, Bashan, Carmel, and Gilead, and that great mountain that was claimed off in Zechariah 4:1. Those four was all one and the same. They all belong to the same family, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the little stone that grew in Mount Tilda Holy represents the antitypical temple of Solomon, the antitypical kingdom of Solomon that is greater than the one that Solomon built. This is the one that's a glorious kingdom that grows into a mountain filled the whole earth, the antitypical temple of Solomon, which is the same thing as the temple of David. That's what Solomon named it, was the temple of David, or the temple of heaven, of Yahshua here on earth, being the king sitting upon the throne of David in this temple. So this little stone represents this kingdom that grows from mountain fills the whole earth. And it says that this little stone, this mountain of the house of Yahweh, Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, says it is exalted above the mountains. And I've always wondered, what were those mountains it was exalted above? It was exalted above Bashan, Carmel, Gilead, and that mountain there in Zechariah 4, verse 7, that was cleaned off. Who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, the governor of Judea, this mountain shall become a plain. And you shall bring forth the headstone, which is Yahshua. There it is, that little stone hewn out of the mountain, God's hands, representing the kingdom of heaven here on earth. With David in charge of this little stone. Okay, there you have it. And this little stone becomes the headstone of this glorious temple that is forever. Let us bring this study to a close now with the song. Rock of Ages, cliff from it. Let me hide myself in thee. Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. Let the water and the blood from the wound beside which flow be a sender, double cure. Save from wrath and make me pure. Not the labors of my hand won't fulfill the lost demand. Could my zeal no respite know? Could my tears forever flow? All for sin truth not atone, come a saving thou alone. While I draw this bleeding breath, when my eyes shall close in death, when I rise to worlds unknown, and behold thee on thy throne. Rock of Ages, lift for me, let me hide myself in thee.